this hour's top stories, the death toll from severe floods in Europe rises to 108 as more than 1,300 people remain missing in Germany alone. South Africa's president voices concern about racial tensions in parts of the country following a week of deadly unrest. And Afghan officials say government forces have launched an operation to retake a major border crossing with Pakistan from Taliban militants. Welcome to the program. Hundreds of people remain missing in Germany after record rainfall caused huge flooding there. A search operation is now underway to find more than 1,300 people missing in Germany's west. Authorities say 93 people have lost their lives. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has called the flooding a catastrophe. Her country is the worst affected state by the ongoing flooding in Western Europe. That is the worst in recent history there. Belgium has confirmed at least 15 deaths. Luxembourg and the Netherlands have evacuated thousands of people. More heavy rain is forecast across the region Friday. Experts have blamed climate change for the huge floods. A protest against the renewal of an anti-migration deal between Italy and Libya has been held in front of the Parliament building in Rome. NGOs say the deal confirms Italy's complicity in torture of refugees. Here's more.
On Wednesday in the Italian capital, humanitarian activists gathered outside the Italian parliament to stage a protest against an anti-migration deal between Rome and Tripoli. The protest, dubbed a blindfold to avoid seeing the truth, was called by a number of NGOs ahead of a crucial parliamentary vote on the renewal of the accord. Protesters were saying the deal has been causing suffering to tens of thousands of refugees since its signing in 2017.
Under the deal, Italy helps Libyan maritime authorities to stop boats at sea and return the illegal migrants to detention centers in Libya. At least 50,000 people, including thousands of children, have been returned to the northern African countries so far. However, the condition in Libya is a matter of concern as they face detention and serious abuse, including rape and torture.
I think it's not a problem, unfortunately, only of the Italian government and the country. It's a European problem, and the European policies, basically, Europe endorses the Italian initiative.
During the protest, activists read messages of desperation sent by the refugees trapped in war-ravaged Libya. Some refugees have unsuccessfully attempted to cross the Mediterranean up to 3-4 times.
Facciamo finta di non vedere cosa succede.
We keep turning a blind eye to what is happening in Libya. The decision to renew the deal is a shameful display of how far EU governments are prepared to go to keep refugees and migrants from Europe's shores.
C'è una parte della politica italiana.
Here in Italy, some politicians deal with the migrants as if they were enemies at the gates, creating fear among Italians. The other politicians make sure not to create too much discomfort to their electorate.
Some lawmakers who attended the protest also said that an Italian Navy ship docked in Tripoli has even directly coordinated the intercepting activities carried out on the refugee boats by the Libyan Coast Guard. Later on Wednesday, Foreign Minister Luigi Di Maio told the House that Italy will no more fund the Libyan Coast Guard to encourage a management of migrant flows that is more respectful of international norms by Tripoli. Max Civili, Rome.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa says the deadly unrest in his country over the past week was planned in advance.
And it's quite clear that all these incidents of unrest and looting were instigated. There are instigators, there were people who planned it, they coordinated it.
Ramaphosa expressed concern over rising racial tensions in some parts of the country. He said his government would not allow anarchy and mayhem to prevail. The South African president was speaking to media as he visited KwaZulu-Natal province. That is one of the worst hit areas in the unrest. Violence broke out after former President Jacob Zuma began his 15-month jail term for refusing to appear at a corruption inquiry. Officials say 117 people were killed and more than 1,700 arrested. They also say a dozen suspects have been identified in connection with the violence. Afghan officials say government forces have launched an operation to retake a key border crossing with Pakistan from Taliban militants. Heavy fighting is going on in the Spin-Boldak border crossing as Taliban insurgents have reportedly taken shelter in civilian homes. The border point provides direct access to Pakistan's Balochistan province. That is where the Taliban's top leadership has been based for decades now. The crossing fell to the Taliban earlier this week. The militant group has also captured Afghan border crossings with Iran and Turkmenistan. They stepped up their attacks in May, taking control of a swath of territories in Afghanistan. The military has pledged to retake all those areas. Our correspondent, Amin Alami, quotes Afghan authorities as saying that the military has regained control of some territories captured by the Taliban.
The Afghan government officials here in Afghanistan's defense ministry says that Afghan military forces have retaken the control over some of key districts, mainly northern and southern parts of Afghanistan. One of those key districts and areas is Spin-Boldak, that connects southern Kandahar province to neighboring Pakistan. Spin-Boldak is also home to the former police commander of Kandahar province, who was well known for his anti-Taliban stances. After capturing this area, I mean Spin-Boldak, the Taliban militants also entered the house of this former Kandahar police chief and even burnt all of what were inside this house. In the meantime, the Taliban spokesman also says that they have gained major achievements not only in Spin-Boldak but also in Wish, that is the main border point between Pakistan and Afghanistan in the southern part of this country. On the other hand, the Afghan government officials say that Afghan military forces have retaken Chakhansur district from the Taliban militants located in western Nimruz province, southern Nimruz province of Afghanistan.
Lebanon's political crisis deepens after Prime Minister designate Saad al-Hariri failed to form a new government and announced his resignation. Hariri stepped down on Thursday after a meeting with President Michel Aoun. He has accused Aoun of hampering the process of forming a new government. Hariri told Lebanese media that he would be unable to run the country with a cabinet that Aoun wants. In response, the president's office said Hariri was not ready to discuss any kind of amendments to his proposed cabinet. Meanwhile, protests have broken out in the capital, Beirut, with protesters clashed with security forces. A number of people were injured. Lebanon's last government was forced to resign last August after a deadly explosion in Beirut. The country is also facing an economic crisis. Israel's new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, has relaunched a controversial project to construct over 3,400 settler units in the occupied West Bank. The so-called E1 project involves construction of the units at an area where hundreds of Palestinians live in Bedouin communities. Mona Kandil is in West Bank.
Israel has advanced a major settler building project known as E1. Israel's new prime minister, Naftali Bennett, has relaunched the controversial project for the construction of over 3,412 settler units in the occupied West Bank to connect the largest Israeli settlement of Ma'ale Adumim to the West Jerusalem Al-Quds. The project was first pushed forward by former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Palestinians have slammed the move as seriously dangerous.
Now, as Bennett brings it on the table, it is just to show the settlers that he's better than Netanyahu. He's continued the main strategy and the ideology of the settlements in the West Bank. Netanyahu has been freezing or a little bit slow down the working in the E1, but they are now pushing it forward. This is a very dangerous colonial project in the West Bank. This will be totally cut off and divided the West Bank between the north and the south. So it's very sensitive, very strategic.
Israeli authorities have been seeking to expel tens of thousands of Palestinian Bedouins to other Palestinian towns since long time ago because the area has been allocated to E1 settlement constructions. This area sits on roughly 15 square kilometers of land northeast of Jerusalem Al-Quds. For years, the Israeli regime has tried to dismantle the Bedouin communities to make way for its massive E1 settlement project in East Jerusalem Al-Quds. The planned Israeli building in E1 would effectively cut the West Bank in half and prevent Palestinian sovereign contiguity between northern and southern West Bank.
The project comes in line with Israel's annexation plan. The new regime in Israel is seeking to disrupt any territorial integrity of a future Palestinian state based on the 1967 borders. To this end, it displaces more Palestinians in violation of all international laws.
Palestinians say that it's very clear that Bennett is even worse than Netanyahu, as he started rapidly to carry out his agenda to expand illegal settlements in the occupied territories even more vigorously. During Netanyahu's term in office, Israeli-only roads were built as first step in constructing settlements in the controversial E1 zone. Now Bennett has revived the plan and the actual construction for E1. Palestinians warned this project would practically cut the occupied West Bank in half. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
A disturbing case study released by British Muslim advocacy group CAGE has exposed the British education system, which has been receiving quote-unquote diktats to punishing students who express pro-Palestine views. The findings also reveal that a number of students have been either suspended or referred to anti-terrorism watchdogs simply for wanting to vocally defend Palestine during Israeli attacks on Gaza. Robert Carter is in London.
Accusations of a state-led anti-Palestine crackdown in British schools have been proven true following the release of a case study by Muslim advocacy group CAGE, which details not only the shocking treatment of students who expressed their humanitarian support for Palestine during Israel's recent onslaught, but also that school leaders have received diktats from the government.
These shock findings highlight the extent in which the government seems to be prepared to go in order to stamp out criticism of Israel at every avenue. Even young students are being targeted by the scheme, which appears bent on hampering freedom of speech on this particular issue.
Out of the 47 cases documented, censorship tactics included verbal warnings, suspensions, a student being expelled, and even police intervention and a referral to an anti-terrorism agency. While most of the students' activities involves little more than vocalizing support for Palestine, fundraising, and displaying Palestine flags. CAGE representatives expressed great concern at the toxic influence government watchdogs have in the British education system.
The schools happily endorse and welcome expressions of support for the Black Lives Matter movement. They join in campaigns against Islamophobia, against any sort of racism that exists in society and prejudices. But when it comes to issues of Palestine, it's as though they are blindsided, and they very much become extensions of the policing arm of the state. Schools and school leaders have a duty to foster an environment within their schools that is conducive to civic education and to create students which are active citizens in the future. What schools should not be doing is disciplining students for practicing basic empathy and showing solidarity with oppressed people around the globe.
For adult activists, speaking up for Palestine could see your reputation assassinated. But now, even young, aspiring humanitarians could see their futures dashed simply for speaking out. Robert Carter, London.
The United States and Germany have pledged to stand up to what they call Russian aggression. The pledge was made during a meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and German Chancellor Angela Merkel in Washington. The two also discussed the Nord Stream 2 pipeline project that is under construction to transfer gas from Russia to Germany. The U.S. president said he has misgivings about the project. Biden said he and Merkel were united in their belief that Russia should not use energy as a weapon. Russia in the past has rejected such claims. It has been at odds with the West over a range of issues, including activities that Russia sees as threatening to its security. At least 9 people, including a congresswoman, have been arrested during a voting rights protest in the U.S. Capitol of Washington, D.C. Democrat Joyce Beatty and the rest were arrested on Thursday afternoon. They protested to call on the Senate to pass a key bill that is part of election reforms Democrats are pushing for. The bill passed the House in March, but it's being held up in the Senate because of a Republican filibuster. Representative Beatty and other protesters entered the Hart Senate office building chanting, quote unquote, end the filibuster. U.S. Capitol Police say they arrived at the scene after, quote, reports of illegal demonstration activity. They said those refusing to stop were arrested. Now, China has once again expressed its opposition to what it calls the U.S. interference in Hong Kong affairs. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman said Hong Kong is China's and the U.S. should stop interfering in any form. There have been reports that Washington plans to impose sanctions on Chinese officials on Friday. Reports have cited China's crackdown on democracy in Hong Kong and warned international companies over the situation there. Washington and Beijing have been at odds over Hong Kong since China approved a security law for the city in June of last year. The U.S. says the law curtails freedoms in Hong Kong. China rejects it.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Today.
Half an hour to shower, put on my face, put it all together, top up with a milk tea, and out the door. That's my morning routine. Could take less time. Not for butterfly children, nor for the mother getting her autistic child ready for his care center. It's a full working day from 9 to 4 for trainers and trainees. That's up to 12 kids and youngsters daily. Here in Iran Autism Association, we are faced with medium to severe autism, but hope prevails. Repetition, habit, belief is the order of the effort mantra to improve trainees' conditions. There's plenty to be said on the matter of ASD and EB and obstacles they meet along the way, namely sanctions. So stay with me, Leila Faramirzi, on Iran Today. autism is a neurological disorder, usually graded in severity along a spectrum, ASD. It causes problems with thinking, feeling, language, and relating to others. And so, medications prescribed serve as a means of chemical restraint rather than having a legitimate therapeutic purpose. That is to say, kids or sufferers are treated for conditions often associated with autism, including anxiety, hyperactivity, and aggression. We are talking anything from sleep disorders to violent meltdowns. The 7-year-old Iran Autism Association started its program for severe cases 6 months ago. Girls are in mind too, but resources are still limited and demand on the part of families has been higher for boys to receive care outside home. I got to talk to all sorts of professionals at either center of the association, namely athletic young trainers. It was touching to see them put their energy to use in childcare with a complication. Here's an expert opinion by Mr. Tavakkoli.
Medication as part of the treatment for autism can manage some of the symptoms. We provide occupational therapy for sensory, motor, and cognitive functions, speech therapy, behavioral therapy, and also music and art therapies such as painting with watercolor and so on for children, so they can acquire skills by the age of 7, enter the education and school process, and learn reading and writing skills. Our interventions will help the children to easily perform simple and repetitive tasks after a certain age.
Sensory issues autistic people have dysregulate them further, which makes training all that much more sensitive. Say if a caregiver yells at a child in an effort to rein in behavior, it's likely to have the opposite effect. We met Mr. Fallah, a lead trainer, as he was working hands-on. His background is sports.
Every child is different. One can reach a particular level in 1 month, another might take a year. If you consider 10,000 autistic children, every single one of them needs their own special care. It's not like one guideline applies to all. That's what makes things more challenging. The coach's decisions at the moment matter. The decision made at the moment could be a right or a wrong one.
In this episode, I'm telling of how sanctions have hampered the inflow of medical supplies and pharmaceutical raw materials to this country. Also, of how they've helped domestic corruption further degrade the Iranian economy, which means families can't readily buy medical supplies, even if available. Autism and the Iranian Autism Association are our case study of the day. A case study of deprivation and survival by self-help and domestic help. But autism is not the only condition at stake. Ms. Javadi is manager of the association's health unit. She shares her medical outlook with us.
The families are procuring the medications by any means, although the economic problems and the massive inflation in their prices have created challenges for accessing the medicines. Currently, families are facing problems in getting their hands on medicines used for seizures, including Depakote and so on. Medicines prescribed for hyperactive children like Ritalin are among those the families report to have become hard to find or risen so much in price. For example, a pack of Ritalin, which used to be sold for 45,000 tomans, is now 125,000. This rise in price for a medication that the child is constantly using is too much.
EB, epidermolysis bullosa, is a rare hereditary disease or condition. It usually manifests in infancy or early childhood with very fragile skin that develops blisters or wounds like third-degree burns. There is no cure, but that means the flow of medical equipment for pain relief and blister control must never stop. With age, however, symptoms of mild forms of the disease or condition, rather, can improve. Our skin is our protective cover. Imagine being uncomfortable in your own skin 24/7, or every hard, flat surface being a hazard if you bump into it to chap your skin. I got to talk to Mr. Golpayagani for a former program on EB. He is executive director of EB Home for Butterfly Children.
The U.S. claims that food and medications are not subject to sanctions. As the father of an EB patient, as well as 750 other EB patients, I can tell you that it is not so in practice. I am feeling the sanctions. I am feeling the sanctions, for example, in dressing here for EB patients.
EB patients, or butterfly children, live with constant pain and stress, with levels varying, of course. They often require extensive bandaging from head to toe and are at risk of malnutrition and other problems. Bathing and wound management can take 3 to 5 hours at a time. We know what will happen if they don't bandage up. Blistering and flaking actually can occur mechanically as the sufferer is just sitting down to force out a chat. The most painful disease you've ever heard of. That's how dermatologists, US dermatologists, have described EB. That's a genetic mutation that occurs in every one in 30,000 to 50,000 live births globally. But each butterfly suffers a pain enough for the whole of humanity and can't be overlooked. As long as there's life, it requires relief. EB patients are referred to as butterfly children because of the delicacy and fragility of their skin, which can grow over. Relief is what they seek, as do their families. The only relatively real relief is through specialized foam dressings that reduce and protect blisters. The best are made by the Swedish pharmaceutical company, Mölnlycke. For Iran's 800 to 1,200 EB sufferers, accessing the supplies became close to impossible since the 2018 US pullout from the JCPOA and crippling sanctions that ensued. But then in May 2020, UNICEF made a surprise announcement that a German-financed shipment of wound dressings from the Swedish company had been procured by the UN and shipped to Iran. The shipment, which weighs just under 6 metric tons, was to be a one-time shipment, but it came at a welcome time given corona-inflicted travel restrictions which stopped respite in the form of wound dressings and bandages coming in with travelers. To see how far our kids of today's focus have come, let's go back to the Autism Association. U.S. sanctions and restrictions on the export of drugs and medical equipment to Iran have shortened the breadth of all patients suffering from special diseases and conditions such as cancer, hemophilia, epilepsy, and thalassemia. Mr. Mohammadi is on the Iran Autism Association Board of Directors, and he is himself father to an autistic son.
The U.S. claims that medications aren't subject to sanctions, but in practice they are, as evidenced by the pharmaceutical companies who are saying they're having problems importing medicine. The importers and producers are facing problems bringing in raw materials. They're also concerned with foreign currency exchange rates. We might suddenly realize there's a drug that plays a key role in treating autism, although some might object, arguing that there's no cure for autism. But children are using medications, they need to improve their attention and concentration. They need to calm down as they're mostly hyperactive and are restless. This means that we need medicines used for managing other symptoms for autistic children, which are quite expensive.
Thing is, Mr. Mohammadi thinks it's paramount to import drugs for quality. That's contrary to our lady doctor's opinion. But they agree on one thing, that it matters which company, Iranian or otherwise, the kids buy from.
You see, for example, the Depakim pills that are produced overseas are way better in terms of quality compared to their domestic counterparts, both in terms of controlling restlessness and lack of attention and focus. On the other hand, we are experiencing different effects from the same medicine which is produced by two companies. For example, the risperidone, which is being produced inside the country, especially by the Subhan pharmaceutical company, varies in its effectiveness. I've seen that in the case of my own child, who responded very well to risperidone made by Subhan, but not to that of Dr. Arbady's company. We never realize why this difference exists.
You see, Iranian pharmaceutical companies are also working very hard, but what's important to us is the accessibility of the medications for the families. We don't want a family of a child who's displaying behavioral problems all day long to be unable to buy the medication they need in their own own city. We don't want them to have to travel long distances to Tehran or its nearby cities just to purchase the drugs. This is heartbreaking. It would be very helpful if the pharmaceutical companies can meet the minimum needs of the families and distribute their products across the country.
Although less than before, there's still plenty of vitamins and ordinary drugs in the market, but the U.S. is making its utmost attempts to prevent Iran from purchasing vital medicine and necessities for, say, cancer patients. Helping kids with debilitating conditions means going as far as preparing them for a measure of independence in society and holding down a job even. It may sound ambitious looking at Iran's unemployment rate of around 10% and more, but then looking at paintings by some autistic individuals, it doesn't seem too ambitious after all, except that shortages can get in the way of progress. Shortages with medicine and facilities, say.
Autistic children are working in production lines everywhere. You can see that in our country too. Some are answering the phone, doing simple tasks such as typing. They are not distracted while they work. Or they can be presenters in a place like a museum, showing the visitors around. Because that's a repetitive task and they might have to do it 20, 30 times a day. This is a simple task for which autistic children can be easily trained to do. They are usually quite punctual. Don't talk on their phones or get distracted by their cell phones like other people, and are generally more organized in their jobs because they are doing the jobs based on their specific talents.
I asked how that would help a society with less than satisfactory employment levels for people unafflicted even.
When we talk about employment for autistic children, some might say there are many people unemployed in Iran, let alone autistic ones. But it's not a matter of who's normal. These children need supportive regulations, and those laws have been written for them. The laws have been enacted by the parliament and communicated to businesses that can use these children as their workforce with special conditions. Part of their salaries are paid by governmental organizations, so they can be employed. We can't assume that all rights are ours, and we are the only ones entitled to go on the streets, have a walk in the park, visit amusement parks, and go to cinemas just because we are healthy and don't suffer from any disability. An autistic child has the right to vote. They and their fathers are paying taxes. They are also paying municipal taxes.
Plenty more to see and hear, but first a quick media review to see what other news outlets have to say. Here it is. In talking of U.S. sanctions, naturally expectations will be directed at the U.S.'s first man. Common Dreams reads, to end collective and cruel punishment, Biden must go further on sanctions relief. The devastation and suffering unleashed on Venezuelans and Iranians as a result of U.S. maximum pressure sanctions has been unfathomable. Iranians continue to suffer from the consequences of maximum pressure sanctions that have devastated the economy, paralyzing the poor and pushing the middle class into poverty. According to the Wall Street Journal, economic sanctions led to an upsurge in unemployment and a depreciation in Iran's currency, the rial, by 80% against the dollar. The rising inflation in Iran, accompanied by dangerous rhetoric from U.S. officials, makes it increasingly difficult for Iran to import essential medicine and medical equipment. A report from Human Rights Watch found that unilateral sanctions disproportionately impact Iranians with rare medical conditions, such as epilepsy, leukemia, and those suffering with chronic eye injuries from exposure to chemical weapons used during the Iran-Iraq War. The report further notes that women have suffered severe complications after cesarean section, performed under non-standard anesthesia, the only anesthesia available due to sanctions. Now, Iran's health sector may have suffered U.S. sanctions, but it's also had achievements, according to Iran's UN representative. Tasnim News reads, UN endangers Iranian nation's health towards political goals, says the envoy. Iran's permanent envoy to the United Nations identifies the United States' illegal and inhumane sanctions against the country as a means of jeopardizing the health of the Iranian people in pursuit of political purposes. Majid Takht Ravanchi, that is, made the statements at the UN General Assembly's high-level meeting on AIDS. He spoke on Iran's accomplishments in the area of HIV-positive patients' health and those who are affected by the phenomena. The official noted how Iranian scientists had managed to enable prevention of the disease's transfer from affected mothers to their children and also contain the disease's adverse effects. Despite the notable progress, Iran is still suffering from the sanctions that prevent its access to medical products, technology, and cooperation with the international financial institutions, he said. Now, what's to be done when autism combines with corona? Irna says adults with autism in Iran vaccinated against COVID-19. According to Irna, Iran Autism Association reported in its website that a group of autistic adults over 18 years old were vaccinated against the coronavirus disease, getting their second dose of the vaccine. People with autism are more likely to be affected by different pandemic diseases. In addition, quarantine is much harder for them due to the complicated conditions with which these people are entangled. As a result, their parents and supporters prefer to keep them at home despite all difficulties. Many of these people need ongoing rehabilitation. COVID-19 disrupts this routine. The closure of schools, the lack of classes, and rehabilitation sessions for these people have all caused many problems, like exacerbation of nervous symptoms and behaviors that have made quarantine much more difficult for them in case they get affected with the virus. Therefore, thanks to the efforts made by the Iran Autism Association in collaboration with Atiyeh Hospital and the Ministry of Health, Treatment and Medical Education, adults over 18 years old received their corona vaccines in three groups. That would be it for this section, but do stay with us. In charges and parents are looking to the greater government, including the legislature, for more help, as well as to their own capabilities. 5-6 years ago, some parents had declared they wanted to leave Iran for countries with nursing homes for autistic people. That's an astronomically expensive option with slim chances of acquiring foreign residency.
We engaged in talks with the parliament, especially with the health commission. They helped us sign into law a national autism document, which we drafted. The document was prepared by Iran's Autism Forum scientific experts, but had been stalled for years in the parliament. That's why we started our work and asked again. They helped us eventually, but the national autism document, with all the aspects considered for it, became a two-page document dubbed the National Autism Program, which was announced and signed by three ministers whose organizations are known as being in charge of autism.
Others said they were willing to work together and help establish a nursing home in Iran. Dr. Momeni in Sweden volunteered. And presently, many parents are involved and extend their services beyond their own suffering to help train classrooms full of kids. We have a case right here, predominantly active even after losing her own child, perhaps because of losing her own child to an indirect autism-related accident.
I don't know. These are some matters that go back to the human beings themselves to decide what they are going to do now that they are living in this world. What was their purpose for being born? If they're here to make themselves useful and take steps to help their peers, they need to understand that this is something that could happen to them too. I think we should want something for others that we want for ourselves. We need to take this step.
In 2019, some 62 centers offering treatment and rehabilitation services to autistic patients were operating under the Medical Sciences University's supervision nationwide, which mostly offer services to those financially struggling patients, a supportive package including occupational therapy, speech therapy, behavioral interventions, and counseling services have been scheduled to be provided to those children and their families by the aforesaid centers. Tehran Times quoted the Health Ministry's head of the Department for Transplantation and Treatment of Diseases at the time, saying his ministry had doubled the subsidies allocated to 4,000 autistic patients under the welfare organization's coverage, granting 10 million rials per patient. For an update, I refer to authority.
Well, the costs are very high based on our average. If a family wants to continue the child's behavioral therapy, it needs to pay at least 5 million tomans per month. This figure is too much for the families, given that many of them aren't covered by any insurance or services, so their problems will grow by the day. Or take this, for example, that most autistic children need to be anesthetized to receive their routine dental checkups, and that anesthesia is too costly for the families.
A problem that definitely grows with age, as Mr. Tavakkoli reckons, is education and training.
They are growing up. They are teenagers and adults now. One of the problems we are facing is that we don't have high schools for these children. Most of the schools are secondary or early high school years. The second issue is that there aren't enough centers where they can learn professions. Children who have a moderate to good performance can learn professions and arts so they can enter society and be employed. Also, we don't have care centers for those who have weak performances. The number of those centers in the country could be fewer than your fingers.
It is estimated about 320,000 autistic individuals can be identified in Iran, approximately 35,000 of them being children under school age. That's up to 7 years of age. In the month that followed, Iran's welfare organization reportedly launched an online autism screening website for parents with children aged 2 to 5 years to refer to. Children found susceptible to autism were to be referred to the nearest welfare offices to confirm the disorder and receive subsequent rehabilitating services.
Our figures show there are about 30,000 autistic people in Iran. But considering the global rates, which may be true for Iran too, there are many more cases in Iran. It's curious how many cases are concentrated in some areas, but no one has conducted any pathological study to establish the underlying cause. One example is the Khuzestan province. I was born there. There is a registered population of autistic people there, which is larger than anywhere else. What's the reason? We don't know. The same goes for the northern parts of the country.
In January, it was reported 90 thalassemia patients lost their lives last year due to U.S. sanctions and a lack of drugs. In addition, another 60 young patients have died in the current year. A Human Rights Watch report from October 2019 references a letter sent by Swedish Mölnlycke to EB Home. That's Iran's largest NGO supporting EB patients. The UN report confirmed the company had decided not to conduct any business with Iran because of US sanctions. According to EB Home, at least 15 butterfly children had died over the last year. As for our ASD trainers, they have bitter complaints but high hopes of their own.
Our main objective is to be able to integrate autistic children into society. We don't want the children to be separated or create a facility to keep them in. As much as we believe the elderly have to be present in the society as a consultant and not be confined to nursing homes. That's why the goal is integration.
That's it for today as we take leave of our Autism Association and Friendly Network. Thanks from the whole team, but do return to the box at the same times next week and each week after as you never know what's on. Bye for now.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was the fifth divinely appointed imam among the household of the Holy Prophet. He was the son of the fourth divinely appointed imam, Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn alayhi salam. Now all historians and traditionalists of Islam are unanimous that among the descendants of Imam Hassan and Imam Husayn, a maximum of religious sciences were expounded by Imam Muhammad al-Baqir. That is why the title of Al-Baqir was given to the Imam which denotes one who splits knowledge. Imam al-Baqir contributed greatly to the science of Quranic exegesis, scholastic theory, religious law, and Islamic jurisprudence, among many other subjects.
قال الإمام الباقر عليه السلام: ثلاث لا يزيد الله بهن المرء المسلم إلا عزا: الصفح عمن ظلمه، وإعطاء من حرمه، والصلة لمن قطعه.
Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam stated, there are three things through which Allah only increases the Muslim in honor: his pardon of one who has wronged him, his giving one who has deprived him, and his reconciliation with one who has cut him off.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us on the program. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. We find that Imam al-Baqir, alayhi salam, peace be upon him, has talked about a great many things in his conversations and in his dialogues with his companions, his friends, his family, his relatives, and the people in general. In one such conversation, Imam al-Baqir really says something which is beautiful. Of course, every single thing that Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon him, this divinely appointed Imam, has spoken about is truly beautiful. But this one stood out to me. In this conversation, Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam urges his companions and the Muslims in general to supplicate to Allah, to do dua, as it is said in Arabic. And so Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam says, surely, definitely, most certainly, Allah hates that people insist upon each other for their requests. Meaning, we go to a certain person and we continuously and consistently just keep on requesting and asking and begging and pleading and supplicating and beseeching another human being for our needs, consistently, constantly, incessantly. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam said, Allah hates that people insist upon each other for their requests. However, Allah, exalted be His name, loves this for Himself. Allah wants people to ask Him for what He has with insistence, continuously, consistently. How very beautiful, dear friends, we find here in this conversation between Imam al-Baqir and his companion, where Imam al-Baqir, peace be upon this divinely appointed Imam, is telling us, is advising us, is encouraging us to always and consistently be asking for our needs from Allah. So, dear friends, never get tired. Never become hopeless when it comes to asking your needs from Allah. Truly, who else is there who can give us what we need, who can give us what we desire, who can give us more than we can imagine? Surely it is Allah, the Mighty, the Exalted, who gives us these things, what we need, and even more. So continue to knock upon the door of the most generous, of the generous, the ultimate generous, the perfect generous, Allah, the mighty, the exalted. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Baqir, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha
illallah. And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
One of the distinction of this, you know, line of imams compared to the other schools of thought is the direct and straight channel to Rasulullah and his seerah. It was the fifth imam the first time, and of course his son also repeated the same words, that whenever I narrate something and I don't give you a sanad, I do not give you the chain of narration, you can assume that what I'm saying has come from my father, and what he said comes from his father, Hussein bin Ali. What he said comes from Amir al-Mu'mineen, and from Ali it comes from Rasulullah, and whatever Rasulullah says comes from Jibreel, and whatever Jibreel conveys to the Rasul is by the command of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And the fifth and the sixth imam, you know, you will see, they will just say Qala Rasulullah. They will not go through the process of sanad. Except in one case, in the life of the fifth imam, and that's very interesting, and there is a real reason behind it. Our fifth imam actually narrates the hadith of Saqalain through a channel which is not of the Ahlul Bayt. A channel of the Sahabi of the Prophet who lived longest. He says that I have been told by Jabir bin Abdullah al-Ansari, who says that Rasulullah said, Inni tarikum fikum al-saqalain, kitabullah wa itrati ahlu bayti. Some of the ulama actually mentioned that this is an exceptional sanad in the statements of the fifth imam. He never, you know, goes through Sahaba. But there was a reason. This is Hadith Saqalain. This is one of the main, you know, bases of the Vilayat of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And there is an accusation from the other side. They say, well, you know, their statements of our fifth and sixth imam, they call it Mursal. Mursal means narration of the Prophet which doesn't have sanad between the narrator and the Prophet, because they didn't see them. So this is Mursal, that doesn't have any value. But since this was a controversial issue between the Mabahib, Imam wanted to do Itmam Hujjat. But now I'm not talking about our internal, you know, Salsala that we have in the family. You know, now I'm going through your Salsala here, and the Sahabi who lived the longest, who brought the salam of Rasulullah, my grandfather, to me, he was there. And he himself, you know, heard Rasulullah saying, Inni tarikum fikum al-saqalain, kitabullah wa itrati ahlu bayt.
Thank you very much, dear friends, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to log on to our website at parstoday.com, Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio.
Coming up is the news.